Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yeah, baby. Started to burn so many things we found. And talking about digging into the ground, the Mueller report came out today. Oh, my God. Talk about a feeding frenzy. This is really spectacular. We have Danny on board. Danny, you with us?
I'm right here, Sluggo.
And Sarah Nelson, you coming in?
Okay.
Danny, are you with Sarah? Are you in the same proximity?
She's in the next door office. In fact, she was
okay,
knocking on my wall to tell me to call. So she knows
okay,
we're
right
here.
All right. So we're going to have an amazing time today. But first, we're going to talk about the Mueller report. And it's unfolding, and I've been following it in the New York Times. I mean, this is really like, you know, a water buffalo has walked into a pool full of piranhas. But I want to talk about what's going on here with the Reds, because nobody's covering. It's outrageous. Nobody is covering this. And Pine Ridge has just been devastated. And Danny and Sarah, you guys work with the indigenous community. So can you – hello?
Yes, I'm right here.
Can you tell us what's going on Pine Ridge?
Well, they got, as you know, there was a more recent storm hit there about 4 nights ago and dumped another foot of snow on everybody, and then it started melting the next day, and so it's still overflowing the Missouri River and still flowing in there. There's still this loggerheads. The major story out of the whole thing is that the FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, under the Trump administration, is so kind of reactionary in their view of everything. They are absolutely insistent upon sending any FEMA relief for the reservation to the state of South Dakota, and having the state of South Dakota handle the whole thing. And the tribal council at Pine Ridge said, wait a second, the treaties all provide for a sovereign-to-sovereign relationship between the federal government and us. You're supposed to provide the direct assistance to us, not through the state. And the FEMA people up to this point are still saying, we'll agree to send stuff to the white-controlled state, you know, but we won't send the assistance directly to you. And so our people from the Lakota People's Law Office, including Chase Iron Eyes, who is a close friend and kind of associate of Julian Bear Runner, who is the new tribal chairman there. You remember that Chase and Julian were co-defendants in the criminal charges of trespassing lodged against them for the Standing Rock protest. And Julian has now been elected as the tribal chairperson. He gets this thing, falls right on him. And there, Danny Paul from our shop, Danny Paul Nelson, and Chase Iron Eyes are both working directly there in the office of the tribal council chairman, trying to coordinate getting this information, getting the assistance in from FEMA. They have to address the issue of the tribal council having voted overwhelmingly not to allow the state to become the conduit for them. They've had terrible experience in the past, where the state takes 25% of all of the money for their own administration, and then the native people get next to nothing coming out of the other end of it, and the bureaucratic holdups are massive. So they're still all, people are walking around, you know, up to their knees. You know, they've got up to 18 inches of water in virtually all the houses there. The houses are, you know, have massive holes in them from hailstorms from months ago. So it's a very serious condition. And so what they've done is our office, the Lakota People's Law Office, has so we've also sent in Chuck Banner, our media person, to help prepare direct appeals that the Pine Ridge Reservation is sending out to people across, you know, Facebook and YouTube, sending out appeals for direct assistance. Now, some of it's starting to arrive because we have in place a lot of our previous communications from Standing Rock of, you know, asking for assistance for supplies and other things. So that some of that is started, but it's very difficult to get the supplies in there because all the water, all the roads are underwater. So they're trying to get, them in now. So that's where they are right now. I just talked to them last night again. And I'm just seeing out of the corner of my eye because I'm doing all this stuff on the Mueller report. But just out of the corner of my eye, you know, the video that they put out with the latest appeal showing them offloading some of the blankets and dry clothes for people, et cetera, from a distance, and then carting it in by foot to bring it into the reservation. But it's pretty intense there now.
Sarah Nelson, do you want to jump in on what's going on at Pine Ridge?
Hi. Yes. I don't know if Danny has told you this because I was just getting on the phone right now, but one of the things that's important, I think, is that our team out there, Chase Iron Eyes, Daniel Paul Nelson, and our videographer, Chuck, and they've hired some people that are out there who are very expert at how you gather the
data. Lakota people, yeah.
For getting information to FEMA. FEMA requires that you prove everything in a certain kind of way. And they discovered a person who lives right near the reservation who is actually an expert at this. This is really helpful because it's been... FEMA is not helping and neither is the state. And so our team is working with the tribe to gather the data in the proper form to further pressure the government, particularly the federal government, to declare this a state of emergency and start to treat it as such and get some finances in there for the big equipment that's going to be necessary and all of the work that is going to be needed to get people's homes to work again and to be able to drive their vehicles and what have you. So, but it's, you know, it's like everything else. It's a poor community and it is right now being sidelined by the federal government.
God, it's awful.
And it's terrible.
Where are the people staying? Where are the people who've lost their homes? Where are they staying?
Well, I know.
Well, they've
got
a Lutheran. There's a big Lutheran center there. There's the Billy Mills Center, which is like a place for a meeting house that they have. What they're trying to figure out how to do is how to pump the water out of those places so the people can have a central place at which to stay. And so they're trying to build land dikes and stuff around those centers to hold back the water. So they can bucket brigade the water out from within the kind of dam around the buildings, so they have a dry place to stay, and people are trying to get into their houses to get the stuff up away from where the water has been rising to protect any of their things, any of their possessions at all. It's still kind of chaotic. They don't have a systematic structure put in place to handle a situation like that. So what they're really trying to do is they're trying to get both the expertise of this team of people that's run by this local Lakota man to help them, and they're also trying to take advantage of some of the logistics that they had put in place to deal with the Standing Rock situation. Remember when they had the terrible storms, the huge snowstorms that came in and sort of buried the entire Cheti Sokoan camp up there. And so there's been some institutional or community knowledge about how to cope with something like this. And so since Chase and Julian Bear Runner were both kind of involved in helping facilitate some of those, putting in place some of those systems up in Standing Rock, they're trying to reignite some of those systems, and they have some of the lists that the Standing Rock Tribal Council had some of the lists and email contacts for some of those people that provided us earlier. That's what they're doing.
How many people, Sarah Nelson, are affected here? And then we'll go to the Mueller report. But how many people are affected? Has anybody died? What are the most crucial problems physically in the area there?
Okay, this afternoon on your program, either Chase Ironize or Daniel Paul Nelson is prepared to go on at the end of this program today.
Yeah, okay.
And they can give you more hard facts to answer those kinds of questions. I can say, that there is a guy who has a Lakota man who has a wonderful solar program going, you know, where he puts solar up for people, and it's a small business, and he's doing a great job. Well, his entire plant was underwater. His warehouse, you know, he had a kind of a warehouse type, barnish type looking thing that had a lot of equipment in it. There were three buildings that I could see on his sort of farm plant area. Water up to, you know, several feet up on everything. So this is one example of what's happening. He estimated he's looking at about $250,000 worth of damage. And this is why we have to get the federal, we have to get FEMA, we have to get the Trump administration, which is, you know, challenging, but we've got to inundate them with demands for them to recognize this as an emergency area and get FEMA flowing in there to help them.
I'm sure that the Trump administration will be every bit as generous and forthcoming with the Iron Ridge Reservation as they have been with Puerto Rico. I mean, maybe Trump will come there and hold a press conference and throw paper towels to everybody. We'll talk about that more at the end of the show when your people call in from the res. Is there anything else you want to put in before we move to the Trump the Mueller situation? Sarah,
well, I would just urge people to help if they can, because every bit of help that's coming in, they can do it through the Lakota People's Law Project, and that immediately becomes available to the team out there and the tribe to pay for direct things that are going to make a difference, like the hiring of these people who know how to do the FEMA reports.
Is there a website?
Yes, it would be LakotaPeoplesLawProject.org. Chase Ironize and Daniel Paul Nelson are managing that money. They're completely responsible. And so anything that goes there that the people want to help with this, it's going to go to the expenses that are being every single day out there. They've got new expenses trying to deal with this.
Okay. Lakota People's Law Project.
LawProject.org.
All right. Okay, listeners, please chime in, and we'll have more on this at the end of the hour. Okay, now the discussion, you know, I got to say that I was in Mexico sitting in a hammock in 1973 with a beautiful woman that I wound up living with for 7 years, and I picked up somehow a Time magazine and read about Watergate. God, I just had to go home. So here we have today the revelations of the redacted Mueller report, and by all accounts, it's a spectacular piece of work. The funniest tweet I saw, I did watch excerpts of the Attorney General's cover-up, you know, his song and dance routine, and Rosenstein was standing beside him, and somebody tweeted that Rosenstein had just blinked out the word torture. Anyway, Danny Chan, hop in here. Let's hear what you got to say about what we know.
Well, as distinct from being in Mexico hanging out in a hammock when all this was going on, I was in Epley Bailey's office, and that is the office that was representing James McCord in the Watergate burglary, and got James McCord to write the letter to Judge Sirica blowing the whistle on Richard Nixon and the plumbers unit. And I was then, when I left that office I was asked by Chuck Morgan, the director of ACLU National in Washington, D.C., to write the first articles of impeachment for Nixon, for the American Civil Liberties
Union. Well, I hope you get signed copies of those drafts, man.
No. In fact, I didn't do it because Chuck Morgan said, you're going to have to agree to do absolutely anything and everything I say as a condition for me having you do this. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And so he said, well, then we'll have to have somebody else do that. So, all right. I went and became a chief counsel for the United States Jesuit headquarters. So the bottom line is I've been deeply involved in these things, so I know the law. And what's most remarkable here is, now I haven't gotten it all dug out. I have to run in 50 minutes, obviously, to go teach a class on this at the University of California, Santa Cruz. But the key to focus on here is, like, from pages 171 to 176, there's a set of discussions that are undertaken by Mueller, which constitute, in my opinion, at least preliminary opinion now, the roadmap to the impeachment. It's very similar to what the grand jury did in the Watergate case. The grand jury, while they did not indict Richard Nixon because they were informed that you could not indict a sitting president, they forwarded to the House Judiciary Committee, chaired by Peter Rodino at that time, a full report from the grand jury. And the Judiciary Committee used that grand jury report as the roadmap for figuring out the articles of impeachment against Nixon. And when they started voting out articles of impeachment by a majority of the members of the House Judiciary Committee, that's when the Republican leadership went to Nixon and told him that he was out, that they were returning articles, the House was going to vote for them in a massive overwhelming majority, and that the Senate would have to convict him. So he resigned. And so that there's this long discussion by Mueller between page 171 and about 180, actually, where he discusses the entire blueprint for what it is that you could impeach him for. And he goes on in some detail about this, and I think that's going to become the key, because he is saying over and over again, whereas there may be things that the president could do with regard to dismissing prosecutors or doing things that might otherwise be understood to be obstructions of justice, even if in fact they didn't qualify for a criminal prosecution because he's president, it doesn't mean that he couldn't be impeached for this. And he actually says it, and he points out that the Congress has the authority to actually hold hearings looking toward supplementing the obstruction of justice criminal statutes to apply directly to a president, that they would have the authority to do this. And he goes on at some length about what type of steps the Congress could take from a legislative point of view to supplement the present obstruction of justice laws. And I've still got to go through the part on the collusion, because he goes into some detail to point out that it is not true that there is no evidence of collusion. That's what Barr kept on saying. There's no evidence of collusion. That's completely untrue. There's massive amounts of evidence of collusion and criminal conspiracy. It's just that the prosecution team wasn't certain that they could obtain a criminal conviction on this, because it requires scienter or specific evil intent on the part of the president, and that because he didn't submit to a sit-down deposition from the prosecutors, they were unable to really ascertain his intent. But they point out that Congress is fully authorized to hold hearings to ascertain exactly what was going on with his intent, so they could craft a supplemental legislation to supplement the federal obstruction of justice laws. And then he points out, and he does that on page 171, and then he goes on to say, except on page 173, it just says, Congress cannot reserve for itself the power of removal of an officer charged with the execution of the laws except by impeachment. So what they're saying here is that even though at the present time the interpretation of the federal law of obstruction of justice may appear to give the president the right to remove, for example, the special prosecutor or his attorney general, without it necessarily being convincing evidence of obstructing of justice, he said that they still can impeach him for it, because the Congress has the control over that type of decision. So he has, and there may be more pages of this, but in those pages, those some 9 pages in the volume 2, having to do with the obstruction of justice, it very clearly is a roadmap that's being pointed out by the Mueller team. And in fact, they have cited Nixon, the U.S. versus Nixon, no less than 7 times in 6 pages, pointing out how they can do this. And he also points out. It's kind of funny. Mueller has cited cases going all the way back to 1831, and 1895, and others, showing, how fundamental, the issues are that are at stake in this case. They go all the way back to the very origins, of the Constitution in our country. This is a profound document that we have here. And when they get Mueller on the stand, which Nadler's going to do, I think by May 20th or so, he has already said that they're going to be asking him these questions. And
what are the restraints on Mueller? If he's no longer in the employ of the Justice Department, is that correct?
Well, no, it's not exactly clear what his technical legal status is now. One could take the position that upon the submission of the report, his hiring was closed. But you need to remember, he is not a special prosecutor, as Jaworski was or Harvey Cox was or any of those guys, that there was a special statute that the Congress passed, setting up a special prosecutor that expired. It had a sunset clause on it. And what they've got is a procedure that's been set up inside the Justice Department about hiring a specific special counsel that is different from a special prosecutor or special counsel under the previous federal law. This is a procedure simply that's been set up inside the Justice Department, authorizing the Justice Department to hire a specific attorney to do only one specific thing. And that's what this was. And so the question as to whether or not that employment terminated upon the submission of the report or not is really a matter of the contract that they established with Mueller. But that's why this morning when Barr said that he, as the attorney general, still the boss of Mueller, would consent to him testifying, that was actually very important. Because he theoretically could have directed him not to testify, because he's simply an employee of the Justice Department. So that's a remarkable and important piece of news, even with heaping all of the vitriol on Barr that he so clearly merits from this morning's performance. That fact is an important piece of news, that he has specifically authorized his employee to testify.
Well, but then the question is, what are the restraints on Mueller's testimony?
There would be none. There would be he would be exercising the same constraints that he has in some of the blacked out portions of the report. Like, he would not answer questions regarding grand jury information. He would not answer questions that had to do with certain people that had been investigated and that they'd been cleared basically of any criminal conduct or they'd not been able to come to any clear decision. He could refrain from those kind of answering those kind of questions because. Whether he's still employed or isn't, he would sort of be bound by those rules of his previous employment. And I'm certain that his contract continues to keep him bound, just like an attorney, even after they're no longer employed by a particular client, they're still bound by the attorney-client confidentiality. And so he would still view himself as being bound by the internal rules of the Justice Department governing sources and methods, grand jury testimony, et cetera. But my sense is, from having read what I've read so far, that it's quite clear that Mueller and his team have gone considerably out of their way to set forth this roadmap for the Judiciary Committee to look at specific laws. They've gone into citing a long string of cases, analyzing the cases, showing that Congress has the authority to do this and to potentially impeach him for this stuff. And there's another provision. I haven't found it yet. It was cited earlier this morning, page 381 and 382 of the report, but they're not numbered that way. The first volume dealing with the collusion question is 1 through 200, and then the second volume dealing with the obstruction actually is like number page 100 to 200 again, 180. They're basically 200 pages each, but they're numbered separately. And so
here's a question for both of you. In your initial perusal, Danny and Sarah, of this thing, is there anything you see so far that would crack Trump's base, that would turn the people who support him away from him?
It's not
well,
yet.
Well, I think
but
the one
clear,
thing I would say
clear
is that
that,
it depends on whether they can access other analysis
in
Fox.
But in,
but
in volume one,
Danny, wait.
Yeah.
Well, let Sarah jump in.
Pardon?
Sarah, go ahead.
I don't think Sarah's
yeah,
there.
If they're
yet.
Only listening to Fox, they're not likely to, because it's going to be shaped very differently by Fox than what it really is. But there were quotes this morning, and I didn't write them down, but there were quotes from other Republicans who were quite concerned, very concerned, about the way Barr handled this thing, because he clearly came out this morning doing a press conference before the report was released, shaping it in a way that was not true, saying there was no collusion, there was no obstruction. And in fact, that's not true. And people kept saying, all the reporters that we were seeing kept saying, you know, he's really ruining his reputation, because even Republicans are alarmed by the fact that he came out before the report was out, trying to shape how people would think of it, and doing it in an erroneous way, basically misshaping what the truth was. So,
Danny,
Barr
is in big trouble. A number of Democrats, even some on the House Judiciary Committee, are publicly calling for the resignation of Barr, for whatever good that'll do. But they're targeting Barr because they're back into attempting to basically resuscitate Mueller. They were concerned that some of the mischaracterizations of Mueller's report that had been undertaken by Barr might hold some merit, that Mueller had really pulled his punches and had really backed away from making some decisions that would reflect that he's, in fact, you know, the FBI director for W. Bush. They're all long life Republicans that are involved in these decision making here. But the fact of the matter is that now that Mueller has said the kind of things he has said about Trump in this thing and revealed what he has revealed, I think the Democrats are back into kind of extolling Mueller and targeting Barr for whatever good that's going to do. Because Trump is going to praise him to the hilt and say what a fantastic guy he is. It's going to be important now to keep a focus on this. That what I want to do is I want to get a look at this volume one that has to do with the collusion, because I think that's the Achilles heel. You know, I think that the issues of obstruction of justice, and even though that's what Nixon got ousted for ultimately, the bottom line is that what Nixon was really ousted for was the revelation of all of the horrible, heinous, criminal type of conduct that he was doing, attacking other enemies, the enemies list that he had, the sicking the IRS on people, you know, the directing of the burglaries of not only the Watergate Hotel, but, you know, to Dan Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office, the suggestion they might want to burn down another public interest group that they didn't like, things like that, the things that shocked the conscience of the Republican Party, at least back in 1974. Even though the same things don't seem to shock the present Republican Party, the fact of the matter is, it's in that collusion with the Soviet Union. It's the effectiveness of the narrative of Mueller in laying out a case that borders on treason. That's going to be the key. And what they're doing there,
front, Danny and Sarah, on the very first page that I read, Mueller states without any reservation that the Russians, the Soviet Union is no longer Danian. I understand your reflection.
Oh, okay, right, right.
And Putin certainly does remind us of Joe Stalin. But but Mueller states without any
equivocation at all, yeah.
Or
there's no doubt about that. He's laid the wood right to Russia and Putin.
And there's no doubt at all. Trump's behalf.
Pardon?
It's very clear also that they jumped in on Trump's behalf.
Those two things are solidly established here, and they're not going to be able to get away from that. And the one of the challenges is here. The important thing, and I think the Achilles heel in Volume One is going to be that Trump is absolutely refusing to acknowledge either one of those two things being true, and he was trying to cover it up, actually, because he thought that it would undermine the legitimacy of his election. But I think that the key piece of evidence, and for the listeners to look at, the key piece of evidence is the fact that when Manafort met with the Russian intelligence officer in the cigar store and gave him what has been heretofore only referred to as internal polling data, they were targeting Pennsylvania, Minnesota, and Michigan.
In Wisconsin.
They were targeting those and giving that information to the Russians. And the Russians clearly, and we need to find out what the evidence is, they clearly began to target those areas and stimulating hostility toward Hillary Clinton, hostility toward the Democratic Party. We need to find out what the evidence is as to exactly what they did in response to getting that internal polling data directly from Manafort when he was the campaign chairman.
How is that not collusion?
I agree that it is. But the bottom line is, it's the kind of thing that the regular base of Trump can look at and say, wait a second, that's a bridge too far. That those key states that actually made the difference in the entire election are the exact states that he was sitting talking with the Russians about. And the Russians were trying to penetrate the actual voting machines and stuff in those states. It was clear that they've established now, apparently, that one that they've been able to confirm so far is that in Florida, they actually penetrated the computer system of the Democratic Party in one of the counties in Florida and actually got access to the internal working of their computers. And so that we don't know what they've done effectively up in those four key states that were the swing states. But the bottom line is that what they're saying is that Trump was obviously, he is refusing to protect the United States against any future types of attacks like that by Russia, because he won't admit that they did it. He won't admit that they did it to help him, because he thinks it would undermine the legitimacy of his election and his presidency. And that's what's really going on. And so that's a simple bumper sticker type of attack on him. And that, I think, is where the digging has to really go on here. While the Congress, and I think that the Congress should investigate both of those things, not relinquish, you know, the authority to make this decision that they can't prove to a criminal level of beyond any reasonable doubt the collusion or conspiracy element of this thing with the Russians. I think that what they ought to do is just keep piling on that information to show that there's direct evidence that they were giving the Russians specific data based on their own polling data to target the states where that would make the difference in the election. And that the Russians
did that. That's quite amazing, actually. Yeah, that is amazing. Well, it's no doubt.
I'd like to add to that, Harvey. I'd like to add to that.
Yes, go ahead.
They reported this morning that there's no evidence that they could find so far in these reports that he cared at all about what the Russians were doing. No evidence that he was concerned about the interference in the election. All of the evidence shows he was concerned about himself and whether or not he was going to be exposed or his presidency was going to be undermined by this investigation. There was nothing in there about, okay, let's find out what in the world was done with our election. Nothing like that. To me, that
you got to say that,
you know,
right? You got to say that was true of Obama too. I mean, Obama was warned about a lot of the Russian intervention and didn't do anything. We're talking with Danny Sheehan and Sarah Nelson of the what is it now? It's
Romero.
It's not the Christic.
Romero Institute.
Romero. Yes, I remember you from the Christic. How do people get a hold of you?
RomeroInstitute.org. RomeroInstitute.org. It's as simple as that. We're going to be preparing a lot of information on this. I've got to run to teach a 3 o'clock class right now.
Danny, thank you. I know you've got to run. The question is, and raises with your students, when the first inkling of the report came out and Barr, you know, cleared Trump and said no collusion, no obstruction, there was not even a single bump in the polls. Trump's support was 41%, and it stayed at 41%.
Yep.
The question is it going to stay at 41% after this storm comes out? I mean, clearly there's enough here to cause a major hurricane. The question is, will it shake his base? So we'll see.
I think the challenges, of course, that the hearings that go on in the House of Representatives with Nadler and with the oversight committees, et cetera, that the base of Trump have been so poisoned against the Democratic Party that they're going to view all of those things as being politically motivated and not undertaken in good faith. So the question is to how they're going to go. And they don't believe CNN, and they've been poisoned against MSNBC, where a lot of the intense focus and work is going to be going on. So it's the fight is on. The fight is on that, you know, our people have adequate ammunition now, and they're going to be getting more ammunition. But I think that the critical testimony is going to be with Mueller. If Mueller, when he testifies on May 20th or whatever it is, says that he believes that there is evidence here that would support the legitimate investigation for a potential impeachment, that's going to be the key. I think that's
okay,
going to be
the key. Okay, and I'll tell you the other key.
So they're still,
yeah, you
the
can
American
run,
people
but
are still dependent on the leaders. You know, they still wait to take their leadership cues from the appointed leader.
All right. We'll see. The other thing you got to remember, and this is key, is that what's going to determine the outcome of the 2020 election is how many people of color the Trumps can disqualify from voting. That is one campaign.
Well, the question is, the real operative issue here is that the argument that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and the other people are going to be making, the more moderate Democratic Party, is that, look, by the time you get through with all the hearings and gathering the evidence to bring the articles of impeachment, bring them to the floor, have the debate, move them up to the Senate, and start having to move there in a hostile environment to try to prosecute him, the election is going to be, it's going to be time for the election anyhow. That's what they're,
yeah,
they're,
well, don't,
it's going to
don't,
be their practical argument.
Nancy,
but the refusal,
Nancy Pelosi
the refusal to impeach this president based upon the evidence that is now presently in front of the American people, would be a complete dereliction of duty on the part of the House Judiciary Committee and the House of Representatives. A complete dereliction of duty. And to do that in favor of the Democratic Party structures to be able to just assure themselves of not only an election against Trump as the Republican appointee, because they think that the Republican Party is trapped into having to nominate Trump as their presidential nominee in 2020, that the Democrats are trying to get them to have to do that. And they're thinking that they're going to be able to knock off the people in the Senate. They're going to be with the 20, I think, out of the 33 people that are up for election now in the United States Senate, the one-third of the Senate, that I think 23 of them are Republicans, and like 10 or 11 or so are Democrats. And so they've got a major advantage going in, and that what they're trying to do is transmute clearly impeachable evidence into a mere political advantage, and that they've got, that is inappropriate, in my opinion, that from a legal, constitutional point of view, if there's ever going to be a president in our lifetimes that, that requires being impeached, it's this guy. And on the basis of the evidence that's now in front of us, put together by a Republican FBI director.
Well, and one thing we can count on, Danny Sheehan and Sarah Nelson, is that whatever it is, the Democrats will screw it up. And then
there's a whole new generation, the Justice Democrats that are in there, and the new candidates that are going to be running against some of these new, more moderate Democratic Party members. They may be a much more competent group to protect the Constitution.
Well, let's hope so. There's been nobody worse than the Clintons' new Democrats and Democratic Leadership Council. And those people have to go, and that's Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer right at the top. So as soon as, if we can get those people out of the way, maybe we'll actually have a country and a planet that's survivable. Danny, I know you got to run. Thank you so much, Danny Sheehan. We'll talk with Sarah a while longer.
Okay, Sarah, you stay. Okay, guys, I'm headed up to the Hill to teach. Okay.
Give your best to my students.
Bye.
I hope that someone will call in from the res. So far, I haven't heard anybody, but I think you have somebody lined up. Is that right?
I do.
Okay,
getting
good.
A call.
Okay, great. Building on what Danny says, I think the key here is what are the Democrats going to do? Are they going to blow this like they've blown everything else? I mean, we know, you know, having been involved with the election theft issue, I can guarantee you that the three states that swung the election, in addition to North Carolina, were Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, and the election theft in those three states was more than sufficient to swing the election. And Hillary Clinton, like Al Gore and John Kerry before her, said not a word. And now we see we have definitive proof. It's now part of an axiom of American history that the Russians did, in fact, interfere with our election. So where do we go from here?
Well, I think we've got to really let our people know in these committees that can do these investigations. We've got to let them know that we want them to investigate and we want them to figure out all the answers that were left undone by Mueller when it comes to obstruction of justice, and we want clarity on how we're going to stop the collusion and the impact on our elections before the next one. There has to be a groundswell of pressure so that the politicians understand the voters are awake. We know what's going on. You know, we understand that they have a job to do now, and that Mueller has passed the ball to them, and they've got to pick it up and they've got to run with it.
Well, the number one thing, and what definitely decided the 2016 election for president, along with many other elections, and definitely in 2000 and 2004, is the systematic disenfranchisement, primarily of people of color. And we know that the Republicans are working really, really hard on this. The question is, what are the Democrats doing? I mean, they didn't do anything. Al Gore, you know, let George W. Bush waltz into the White House. He killed the Black Caucus's attempt to challenge the Florida delegation in 2000. We informed John Kerry 100 different ways how the Republicans stole the election in 2004. We've clearly documented how Trump stole it in 2016, and we hear not a word from any of these people. I mean, you know, what's it going to take?
Harvey, hang on one second. Hi. I just realized, Harvey, that our contact in the Dakotas is probably calling that 614 number, and I just gave the 888 number to someone to call them.
Okay, great.
That's probably what's happening.
Okay, guys, so in New York, if somebody calls, let me know.
Here's the thing. I mean, we have been massively disappointed in the past. Things are never exactly the same as they were. We're in a time now where there is tremendous frustration with the lying, the environmental catastrophe policies of this administration. We're in a different situation, and we have to push forward with the understanding that there's a possibility we can break through here. We cannot do nothing under any circumstances. And an example of this, here's some good news. An example of this is what's happening in the Green New Deal. The Green New Deal is the only thing on the table right now that could successfully turn the corner on the coming freight train of climate impact that is going to affect all of us. Quickly to tell you, we passed here in our region, in the Monterey, Santa Cruz, San Benito region, I believe this was done by the Democratic Party, we passed a resolution calling for a California Green New Deal. We found out that Illinois passed a resolution. Now, theirs may include nuclear, which ours won't, as an alternative to oil and gas, but still, they've moved, they've done something. Then we heard that the Los Angeles Democratic County Central Committee just passed a good resolution. We have a copy of it, and it is good. And if people get in touch with us at the Romero Institute and ask for a copy of it, we'll send it to them so they can go to their parties, whether they're Democrat, Republican, or Libertarian, in their areas and say, we want this to be passed at our next convention. We want a call for California Green New Deal, because California can lead the country with this, and we will have our Green New Deal will be one that is really oriented towards clean energy and a clean future, where we won't include nuclear. In fact, we have to have in it that we get rid of all the nuclear waste, so there's nothing on the coast, so when the sea rises, it doesn't start pulling out all of the nuclear waste from any place on the coast that might contaminate the ocean like Fukushima keeps doing. Now, here's another good piece of news on this. The New York State just passed, we just saw it online, passed a very large climate mobilization act that puts solar on rooftops, slashes pollution, protects low-income tenants, and explores the closing of 24 oil and gas burning plants. So they've just made their move, and we've just seen a very short video online that everyone should look at. It came to us from Intercept, and it's AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, doing the narration of a video that's fantastic. It's a video about the future, about what it would look like if we actually passed a Green New Deal. And it's in animation, and you can see all the wonderful things that the future could be made up of if we just get our act together. Now, this administration has been standing in the way of life, of all life on the planet, all the living things, not just us, but all the living things, and the habitat that we need in order to survive. It's actually been causing emissions to increase, and as climate marches on, and as the impacts get worse and worse, we have to be very clear that it's the fossil fuel industry and their administration, because this administration is a fossil fuel administration, and they stand in the way of our future and our living systems, and it's just we have to understand that, and we have to insist that the Congress move forward with further investigation of this administration.
Well, this is, I think it's very clear that five more years of Trump, I don't think our species will survive on this planet. I mean, I mean that
literally. That's the problem.
Can't take, we're not killing the Earth. The Earth is going to be fine without us. And we're killing our ability to survive on this planet. And I don't see how another term of Donald Trump in the White House, our species makes it. I mean, there's the species extinction has just been, you know, horrifying, and we will be part of it if this continues. So, Sarah Nelson, it's funny because I had a book published in 2005 called Solartopia that looked at what a Green New Deal would be, actually. And I'm glad to see now that other people are picking up on it. So, but of course, Nancy Pelosi has come out against the Green New Deal. She's also come out against. She's also come out against Medicare for All, and of course they're screaming and yelling about Bernie, claiming he can't win, and they don't want to deal with the issues that he puts forward. That's what concerns us. Do we know that?
But they are all politicians. They are all politicians.
Well, even Bernie,
and they cannot get reelected without the vote. And we have the power of the vote. We just have to mobilize, and we just have to put the pressure on at levels that make them persuaded they've got to do it.
Yeah, we're talking with Sarah Nelson from the Romero Institute. Is anybody called in from the reservation, guys in New York? Are there any new callers? No, I guess that connection didn't get made.
It could be also that they're having problems out there with connections in general. I don't know. It's not great for communications, and it's all cell phones.
Sarah, I have 8 more minutes. I can fill if you need to go, but it's always great to have you on. And
I have another meeting, so I do need to go. But thank you so much for inviting us to come on, Harvey. I mean, we just need to celebrate every single person in the country that's up and moving and going forward in a positive direction. You know, bless all the people that got this thing passed in New York. You know, just everybody. We need a mobilization like we haven't seen since World War II.
Absolutely. And give us again how people can get a hold of you to send aid to the Pine Ridge Reservation, which is underwater and being absolutely destroyed.
They can send their funds to the Lakota People's Law Project.org, which is our project, and that will be allocated towards what's going on in Pine Ridge.
Okay. Thank you so much,
Thank
Sarah
you
Nelson.
So much. Mm-hmm.
We'll have you back, Danny Sheehan. It's always great to have both of you. And next time you come to L.A., let me know in advance. Okay. So listen, we got a few more minutes, and not many, unfortunately. Having looked quickly at the Mueller report and the reports of it, I think it's really going to blow this guy out of the water. The question is, when will it crack? And I remember, when will it crack his base of support? And I remember during Watergate most of you, of course, aren't as old as I am, that it looked like Nixon was just going to tough it out, denied everything. I am not a crook. And then suddenly something hit, and the water broke, as they say. Now, the difference is, at this point in time is back then we had a Democratic Party that actually had a backbone. We don't have that now. The Clintons killed that in the 80s. And we also had Republicans that had some integrity, and we don't have much of that either. So, but we do have I am impressed with Gerald Nadler. We do have Maxine Waters. We do have some powerful people chairing the committees in the Congress. We don't have a powerful speaker who seems willing to do this unless she's sandbagging and saying, well, she's going to oppose impeachment until the time comes, and then she'll back it up and change her mind. We don't know that. But the bottom line is that there is clearly enough material, even in the redacted Mueller report, to push ahead with impeachment. And I don't know what impeachment's going to – I don't expect Trump to be removed by the Congress. The critical factor here is the 2020 election. And the critical factor in the 2020 election is not the Mueller report, is will anybody be able to vote and have their votes counted. We will have further shows on that. Thank you, crew in New York. Thank you, Sarah and Danny, and we'll be back to you. And do send support for the Lakota Nation. We'll be back next week at PRN. Thank you.
Now we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.